the problem we are experiencing with MRSA infections, both in the hospital and in the community, is increasing morbidity and perhaps mortality, increasing drug costs, and the problem of spread from person to person or on some occasions within families. And this can occur in either the hospital or in a household. The CAMRSA has increased in the community significantly in the past 10 years. And therefore, the morbidity associated with it has also increased. In the early 1960s, methicillin resistance of Staph aureus became a reality, and new drugs needed to be used, such as vancomycin. And as commonly happens in medicine and infections and bacteria and antibiotics, it has become increasingly obvious that no matter what antibiotic we have, bacteria will develop resistance to it. Obviously, then, it becomes important for us to continue to develop new drugs that will stay ahead of the bacteria becoming resistant. And this is sometimes harder to do than one would think. Let's talk about the type of community-acquired or community-associated MRSA infections that we are now seeing. The first most common infection we see is the boil or the abscess, commonly called a furuncle. These are often quite painful, even more painful than the abscess we used to see several years ago caused by methicillin-sensitive Staph aureus. We're seeing other skin lesions such as scalded skin syndrome, necrotizing tissue infections, septic arthritis, septic bursitis, and osteomyelitis, pneumonia, which can be hemorrhagic and necrotizing, endocarditis, serious infections of the heart valve, toxic shock syndrome, pyomyositis, which is a severe muscle abscess, and sinusitis. These are common everyday infections that are being seen caused by MRSA. This is a very important finding, that looking at a skin lesion, an abscess, or a boil, one cannot define as to whether or not it's going to be MRSA or MSSA, that one needs to understand, because of the increasing incidence of MRSA infections, that the presumption is it's MRSA till proven otherwise. So what is the best way to treat these furuncles caused by MRSA? Well, many of these abscesses need to be, incisioned and drained, and that alone will allow for healing of the process. Some of these people do not even need any antibiotics at all. Another group of individuals will require incision and drainage and an oral antibiotic. And people with serious infections may require incision and drainage with parenteral antibiotics. Now, here is an example of a typical furuncle. When a patient presents with this type of lesion, they are often complaining of a lot of pain, and one should right away think about this being an MRSA infection. All that may need to be done is incision and drainage. The questions we then face revolve about when should antibiotics be started. As we said a minute ago, oftentimes incision and drainage alone is all that is necessary. Another question is, where should treatment take place? Should it be at home? Should it be in a healthcare facility? Should it be in a hospital? And the third question is, what is appropriate treatment when we use an antimicrobic? Which ones? Should the drugs be given orally? Should the drugs be given parenterally? Here are some more examples of abscesses that are commonly seen on an outpatient basis caused by MRSA. It's not unusual for the patient to state that they have a spider bite or they've had multiple spider bites. In reality, they may well not have had spider bites, that these are the typical painful MRSA skin abscesses. Sometimes these abscesses are bigger and more painful. And just like everything else, it is often relative. Sometimes these abscesses can occur in any parts of the body, including extremities, torso, or the face. And around the face, we are particularly concerned about appropriate therapy and instituting the appropriate antibiotic immediately. Diabetics have a very high incidence of MRSA infections, particularly involving their feet. And one needs to note that immediately and treat appropriately and aggressively. Sometimes, in addition to antibiotics, surgical debridement of these diabetic foot infections need to occur. And on occasion, one certainly needs to rule out a bone infection, osteomyelitis. Some of the diabetic foot infections are polymicrobic with a MRSA organism plus a gram-negative organism, and therapy needs to be directed against both. One of the problems we also face is what to do with a healthcare worker, such as a respiratory therapist, who has an abscess or a staphylococcal MRSA infection, and when can they return to work. Some individuals have foreign bodies that have been inserted, such as prosthetic joints or even mesh. And if these prostheses or mesh become infected with MRSA, they are extremely difficult to treat, even under the best of circumstances with high dosage of intravenous antibiotics, and oftentimes require removal of the device or the mesh. On occasion, we see individuals who will have septic bursitis of the olecranon or the prepatella space. And more of these infections are caused by MRSA rather than MSSA. And occasionally we're seeing people from the community having a devastating hemorrhagic pneumonia that requires hospital admission and aggressive antibiotic therapy. The antibiotics that are currently available to treat MRSA infections orally include the following. Clindamycin many times is a very good drug to treat these type of infections. And the dosage can vary, but is usually 300 milligrams 3 or 4 times a day. Pediatricians make use of clindamycin for MRSA infections quite commonly. The side effects, of course, of clindamycin are diarrhea and possibility of Clostridium difficile colitis, and that needs to be noted. Another potential drug is sulfatrimethoprim. This drug has been useful in approximately 80% of individuals who have MRSA soft tissue infections. There's a fairly high incidence of allergy, but if someone does not have a sulfa allergy and can tolerate the drug without nausea or vomiting, it is very, very useful, and it is very inexpensive. Tetracycline drugs such as doxycycline or minocycline have also proved to be very useful drugs in the treatment of MRSA infections. Doxycycline, very inexpensive. Minocycline, somewhat more expensive. The side effects of both of these drugs may include gastrointestinal effects, and minocycline has a higher incidence of vestibular disturbances. Linezolid is available orally. This drug is 100% absorbed from the gastrointestinal tract at a dosage of 600 milligrams twice a day, and is very effective in treating most MRSA infections. The problem with linezolid is that it sometimes is associated with cytopenias, occasionally neuropathies, and cannot be given with certain psychiatric drugs because of a serotonin syndrome. And therefore, it's imperative for someone who is placed on linezolid that a concurrent drug history is obtained. The other problem with linezolid is its extreme expense. Occasionally, we can add rifampin to one of these above drugs as a hopeful synergistic mechanism to increase our cure rate. Now, this is not always the case, but seems to be of value when there is a prosthetic device infection caused by MRSA. What's very important for us to know is the cost of all of these drugs. And under some circumstances, the cost may actually dictate which drug we prescribe. For example, trimethoprim sulfa or doxycycline are very inexpensive drugs. And even if a patient does not have insurance, most pharmacies charge very little. But when we move to the more expensive drugs like linezolid, the cost may jump to over $1,000 for a one-week treatment. If that's the case, then if a patient has an insurance policy that offers a copayment that makes the patient pay a copayment of 20 to 30%, at that rate, the patient's paying $200, $300, $400 for the drug. And oftentimes, prescriptions are written and never filled because of this extreme expense.